You're listening to Not Many of You Should Become Teachers, a podcast that explores the world of K-12 education as it intersects with the Christian faith. You might call us extreme moderates. We're skeptics who try not to be cynics and are allergic to cheap rhetoric. Welcome to the show. All right, we're in. Not Many of You Should Become Teachers, a podcast, a faith and learning podcast with our first episode here ever. I'm here with my co-host, Dave. How are you doing?
Hey, not too bad. I can't believe we're finally here.
Yeah, it's been a while. We decided that we were going to do this quite a few weeks ago, and it's just been a process of launching it all, but I'm excited, and I think everyone else is too, or at least everyone that knows about it.
Oh, absolutely. Not the least of all has been my voice, so I feel a lot better than I sound, but we had to delay by a week because I had no voice.
Of course, yeah. So
start a podcast and you lose your voice.
Yeah, you realize that that's actually such a crucial thing. You get through other things like teaching, you come to school a little bit sick, and you just perform at a different level, but as soon as you lose your voice for something that literally requires your voice, your working mind is not as helpful as your ill-functioning voice. But I thought, or actually you thought, that we would kick things off with a bit of an intro to our title. So Not Many of You Should Become Teachers. What's up with that?
It's a really long title. Like, I think you know, you were mentioning earlier that we probably wouldn't have a name this long were it not significant, were it not to have some meaning. And I think there's some meaning behind this phrase.
Oh, I totally agree. I think it's definitely like on the cusp of being too long for like your perky fun business idea, but it's just too memorable in terms of what our niche Christian teaching audience would be familiar with. So I think that is definitely something we had to roll with, and we'll see where it goes, which is really quite exciting.
Yeah, comes from the Epistle of James in the New Testament, James chapter 3, and some people will know this as it has a bit of an edge to it, right? It talks about not many people should become teachers because they're judged more harshly. So I think we're raising the bar here. I mean, it's a bit audacious in one sense to say, hey, we're in and others shouldn't do this, but I think it's holding us to a standard in our profession and what we're thinking about. This is we're not playing around here.
Yeah, not playing around here. That would be the After Hours podcast. We're not playing around here. Another Faith and Learning podcast. So I figured we'd kind of introduce who we are. Those of you who are not familiar with myself, my name is Riley Duick and Dave McFarland, my familiar colleague. So we're teachers teaching in British Columbia, Canada, the west coast of Canada. And I think that may be important for a number of reasons, if you want to elaborate.
I think just this idea of we are teachers in a particular place. So we're going to use some language, some terms that are coming out of the BC context, just around teaching, around our curriculum, around professional development. And some of that you'll have to translate. A lot of you are in BC or will be familiar with what we're talking about. And others, we might have to translate that up.
So Dave, how about you just share a little bit about who you are, what are you doing here, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I'm a senior high school teacher. I teach mostly grade 11, grade 12. Riley and I teach in the same school, and part of the beginning of this podcast was to think through, wait a minute, Riley, you teach at grade 6 level and I'm teaching grade 12. So if we think of this, we try and get away from thinking of schooling like an assembly line or conveyor belt, but you're halfway through that assembly line.
Yeah.
I see them at the end. And so I've just been thinking through what is this project that we're a part of? Yeah, so I'm originally from Ontario, so another part of Canada, and wound up in BC. I would say probably one of the most significant events in my life actually revolves around faith and learning. It actually revolves around the intersection of those two things, how they work together. I went to Trinity Western University. It's one of the few Christian liberal arts universities in Canada. And that's not to say that my schooling in Ontario public schools, which was very good schooling, I just had never encountered my faith connecting with the learning in a way that it did when I learned at Trinity.
I think a lot of people share that sentiment about Trinity. something that could be, it's admirable and hopefully replicable, which would be.
That's the hope. That's the hope. I know there's lots of different opinions on any school and its legacy and what it stands for. But for me, it would be not an exaggeration at all to say that there was both an intellectual awakening that happens when you go to university, but there was a spiritual awakening too, to see these two things coming together.
Oh yeah, I like that. Well, myself, I'm Riley, and I teach grade 6 at the same school that Dave teaches at. In fact, I actually attended school here for 13 years. This is a K-12 school that we work at.
And so all of our listeners, like, is this intrigue? Do we name our school? Is this going to be the school we teach at?
I think they know what school we teach at. So when we say the school we teach at, those that know will know, and those that don't will be have a short-lived mystery until they Google one of our names and find out
the
school we teach at. So I attended here and I lived down the road from the school for all of my school-aged life, mm-hmm. essentially, and still do. So I'm very familiar with just the lay of the land, the culture. I sometimes make jokes that there are sometimes teachers that come here as new to being at the school.
Right.
But even though I'm a newer teacher, like in terms of teaching experience, I feel like I actually have a different experience. You know what I mean? Like, I have this Christian school experience that I know that this colleague, although being an incredible teacher, I just feel like I do have this in onto what these students are going through.
You speak, and it's not just to Christian schooling, but particularly to the school we teach at. You speak you have the accent, you have the grammar, right? I think you speak the language of this school.
Totally. I can relive high points that I see some of my students go through in terms of culture and just team building in the middle school that I work at. And I also can deal with their frustrations, specifically when it comes to faith and learning and different elements of where our faith intersects with our school life.
Which is fascinating, because I've had to, it's not quite a shtick, but you know, we play our strengths, we play what we have. I mean, I've had to play it the other way. I'm an outsider, and I've played from that angle of, this is a culture I've had to learn.
Totally. Yeah, and I think that's actually quite an admirable mindset, because I think there's a lot of people that learn that they need to do that when they come here, which is something that I've been learning as well. It's a continuation of building up on the 13 years of school experience I had in the seats that my students are now sitting in. But aside from that, it really wasn't my plan to work here. I was quite opposed to the idea, because I remember when I was doing my practicum, many times someone would text me and say, oh, there's an opening here, or, oh, you should think about this position if this ever opens up. And I was just thinking, you know, I just don't want to go back to the school that I went to for so long. And I also felt very convinced, specifically in the last couple of years of my faith, in terms of this idea that Christians are really meant to be on their hands and knees serving the poor, which I still am very passionate about. But I felt that if I'm working at an independent school where families need to fork out a certain amount of cash to make sure that their child attends, I just felt, are these students the people that Christ was talking about? And I'm still figuring that out in my life, and what that's supposed to look like. What does helping the poor look like in my life? But I ended up taking the job for a variety of reasons. But here I am working through this idea that these students, like you said, they speak the same language that I do, or mm-hmm. I speak the same language that they do. So to some extent, as long as I'm here, I do have this integral piece of the puzzle that I feel like I can insert into different areas of my teaching that maybe other people might not be able to do. So to some extent, it is a good fit for me here.
Yeah, and however long that season is for you, I think there's been tremendous benefit to having that. That I was saying earlier, this is something I've had to learn. And this is now year 8 of me teaching here, and I have a considerable cast of alumni now, and I keep in touch with many of them. And to hear the good, the bad, the ugly coming out of our school, I don't think we want to shy away from that. I certainly don't want that to be to be varnished.
And if I can say that, I feel like the conversation wouldn't exist without the good, the bad, and the ugly. If everything was just dandy, you know what I mean? Like, what is there to really talk about? And not to be a pessimist, but I think that those are things that really are conversation stirrers.
And this comes back to our little opener when we were sort of wordsmithing that together about being skeptical. There's a lot of things kind of raise an eyebrow at in the Christian education world, and some stuff can be cliche and some stuff can be can seem a little bit simplistic or maybe even cheesy, but we don't want to slip into cynicism. We don't want to, you know, we're not rejecting a system here. We want to work within it, and so reformers in the best sense of that, in the best sense of that word, but also embracing all the good that is here. There's so much good.
Yeah, absolutely. So a big question is why we're here, why we're having this conversation. And I think for me, a huge reason of that is because this topic, this faith intersecting with learning, whether that's because it encompasses a lot, whether you're teaching a certain subject area or teaching Bible, like Bible class, it's a very classic thing, or your school culture and seeing how that intertwines with faith. But for me, I feel like it's lacking at the practical level. I don't necessarily think that there should be pro D upon pro D. And when it comes to how do we integrate biblical perspectives left, right, and center, because that's just programming. You know what I mean? If you overprogram, you lose what's this natural, beautiful element of faith and learning. But I do recognize that there are some things that are missing practically. And I think that that conversation is important. And I'm willing to be a part of it. I'd really like to start some of those conversations. I also recognize that we are in Christian education. The tuition that's being paid for to attend a Christian school, I'm doing quotation marks that you can't see, is Christian education. Parents are paying for Christian education. How many more times could I say that? But I recognize that there are some times that we think, oh, I'm paying for this elite education, this excellence that I'm here for. I could even read the wall, this virtuous, discerning, reflective education. And as much as it is that, I recognize that there are schools in our public sector that are absolutely amazing schools that are reflective and virtuous. And I think the piece that we own, the piece that we're paying for, or that our parents are paying for, is that Christian piece. That's what we have that's so niche. So if that's what we have, that is really what makes us unique and what defines us, we should be pretty good at it.
And if you're talking about it being a piece that we have, is it a component that you just add on?
Yeah.
Or are we stirring this into the mix and it's going to actually change everything that we do? That can sound high and lofty, I know, but I get the sense that you and I we're speaking the same language here a little bit, of wanting that to be, it's integration, but it's beyond that. We're linking the two as well. It's faith and learning happening in every sector of the school.
Totally. And it should be something that we own. Like I said, like we own our faith and learning, that's something that we are slaying at. You know what I mean? Like we're teachers on fire with faith and learning. Come on.
Crushing it.
Yeah, so I feel like that should be a prime area of our professional growth in terms of that faith and learning piece. And I think that it's a conversation that needs to be started in a Christian school, especially without, or at least where we cusp on cynicism, you know what I mean? That skeptical piece of questioning and really making sure we know what we're doing. So yeah, I think that's what I'm doing here.
And that's awesome. I mean, in another way, I don't even think we're starting a conversation so much as we might be redirecting it in some ways. Because this is a conversation that's been going on.
Yes.
But it is, in some ways, the parameters of the conversation have never been discussed. It's never been set out what it is we're doing. We don't have the tools, or to continue the metaphor, we don't have a particular grammar or a vocabulary to talk about faith and learning beyond a Bible class, which is central to what we do, or beyond like a student ministry focus around a chapel program.
You're Man, that's the second time that I feel like I've said something and then you have responded and just, whew, man, I'm so glad.
We're starting to
feel,
you know,
glad that we have this. Like, I just think that you share, oh, like that, what I'm missing, you have, Dave, and I'm so glad that you're here on the show. So how about you share a little bit more, maybe because you teach high school humanities, and I am not as familiar with that as you are. So if you can maybe share with the listeners about what does faith and learning look like there?
Yeah, in a high school history classroom, which is where I spend so much of my time, I've noticed in the past, I would say 2 to 3 years, that there's been a conscious, I would call it a theological turn, right, in terms of my attention to what I'm doing. I've reached a point in my teaching where it's not autopilot, but I'm not thinking about what I'm doing in, you know, what am I going to teach this afternoon, or where's my lesson going tomorrow in that. I've got that under the belt, and now it's thinking about, okay, what about the faith formation that is happening in my classroom? This is now, I have space and capacity to think about those things more than ever before. And I've matured and grown as an educator. But one of the things I was finding was, even in the conversation, we're coming back to this, Riley, about having the tools or having vocabulary to talk about this. When I would talk about, you know, and I'm going to do the air quotes as well that nobody can see, the integration of faith and learning, I often felt that it still had the sense of being disintegrated. You know, like it was, I felt like I was still doing plug and play.
Yeah, I totally agree. And because as much as we say that we want that faith and learning to be so much more holistic than it is, it's
sometimes that itself becomes the rhetoric.
Right? Yeah. That we can, and especially when you just say it over and over again, it just sometimes
We're going to integrate. Yeah, I mean, that's not to say that, I mean, spiritual development of students, that was never, I mean, I never went into this gig thinking that's going to be like a secondary priority. I mean, I'm not from the Christian schooling world, but coming in here, I realize one of the things that's holding me here, that's keeping me within Christian education, is recognizing my ability to form the faith. I mean, it's a huge responsibility. Not many of us should do this, right? That's the whole point of this.
Yes.
Recognizing the weight of, this is not just a history class, but I'm talking to students about the way the world was, which is history, the way the world is, all of our current events and analyzing and doing all of this current, I mean, this is the human condition and talking about things as they are, and then we're governed by this vision of the world as it should be, or the world as it ought to be. And as soon as you get talking about the ought, right, the should question, that's where I'm meeting students at. We're all driven and governed by some vision of how the world should be. This is not just a Christian thing. This is not exclusively Christian. But what would it mean to be informed by a vision of the world that is centered around the person and work of Jesus? I mean, I think that's the ultimate question. So I wasn't being ineffective. You're going to say something. You leaned in. We're still learning how this thing works.
Yeah.
Riley leans in. He's going to say something.
I might have just sat up. I just sat up.
Nothing. Yeah, he woke up, right? It's just like one of my lessons, people just wake up. I've always been careful to avoid some of the common pitfalls. You know, like sometimes we're so well-meaning in our what do you want to call it? Our piety, right? Into our classrooms, we can be so well-meaning.
Piety, I love that.
It's a good word. Into our classroom instructions. Like we'd have these standalone devotions. I would call them Bible-based platitudes that we sort of slap on to sort of Christianize a lesson plan.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, and I would call them sanitized sermonettes. We're not preachers in a sense, but we have this platform. So I find myself getting into preaching mode. Now I'm just delivering this little sermonette, but it's always so sanitized sometimes. That's what I was finding. And it was often, I mean, I might be riffing on something that was connected to the syllabus, but sometimes I'm just drifting, right? And that's what I mean by the disintegrated part. It didn't feel like it was ultimately connected. I was receiving Consistent feedback. We do student surveys. We've got observing administrators into my classroom. I've got this growing rank of alumni I was talking about. And a lot of them are affirming that whatever one might consider to be spiritual in my classes was far from contrived. This is not, I wasn't just winging it, even though I felt like I was totally winging it. And there was something that was happening. And so I thought, if this is my thought process, and this podcast might be a way for me to help, to think this through, in a community of people who are like-minded and thinking this through. If this level of success, by which I mean arrival at an edifying spiritual environment simply by avoiding cliche, simply by avoiding just one-off devotionals, et cetera, or Bible-based platitudes, if that's attainable from practices that are no more complex than me just pulling a volume off of one of my bookshelves, then how much more effective might it be, or what might be possible if there's an intentionally theological approach to what we're doing? I think this is that link between theology and pedagogy, these big fancy words of how do we teach and then what the heck are we teaching?
Oh yeah, that's a conversation.
I said heck.
Oh. That's a conversation I find myself in a lot, especially at the middle school level. I'm not discounting the high school level at all, but I recognize that my students are often in need of like ultra engagement sometimes. Like there's so many, and that's not a bad thing to some extent. Like there's so many great teaching strategies. How can we integrate that in our theological pedagogy, like when we're looking in how are we actually teaching this? And that's something that comes to mind when I think about Bible specific instruction when you're teaching Bible class. But it really does revolve around everything, you know what I mean? But I especially when I think about, because we do have Bible curriculum, like we teach Bible, when I think about what I'm doing there, I've been really intentional on trying to be innovative in terms of how do we teach this? Because like you said, I think you even said it quite a while ago, but just that we're not preachers here. We're not preaching, we're teaching. So what does that look like? Okay, faith and learning. This is called a Faith and Learning podcast. Literally, that's our subtitle. It's printed on our merch.
It's on the mugs.
So what do we mean by that? And Dave, you're more familiar with this than I am, if I'm totally honest, because it's kind of something that you brought in to the school that we work at. So how about you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I don't want to take full credit for, I did not invent the term faith and learning.
90% of the credit.
Well, I'll take 90% because I brought this language to our school context. There's a whole conversation happening in higher education, Christian higher education, universities, happening in different Christian school worlds. But we never really used that language around here. We would talk about Bible curriculum. We would talk about, our in-house phrase was Christian perspectives. We would talk about integrating that into like a biblical worldview. We would talk about our chapel program. And I think faith and learning it's not so much a catch-all phrase as it's this inclusive phrase to say faith happens in the gymnasium. Faith and learning happens in the science lab. Faith and learning happens in chapel.
Totally. And I think to share some of my thoughts on like what does faith and learning mean to you, if someone were just to say that to me, like if I'm totally honest and I'm in this context of the school that we work at, this Christian school, my mind does go and drift into Bible class, Bible instruction, and chapel, once a week chapel, which is like to some extent like a mini student church service, if we're totally honest.
And in the vein of being totally honest, I mean, I think part of our audience, we're talking to educators and we're talking to fellow practitioners. Sometimes even the idea that, well, that's a Bible class issue or that's a chapel issue, that the faith formation process will happen over there. And we've now compartmentalized.
I totally agree. And I think there was this term also that's still used, called like biblical integration, that I think faith and learning has encompassed, like it involves biblical integration in terms of what are you integrating in your teaching into your instruction. But I think it's more than that, because when I think about biblical integration, especially when I attended this school, how teachers were integrating the Bible or faith into what we were learning, I actually think about, and I still think about, because I have this textbook in my classroom. Like, there is a math textbook that I probably used when I attended this school, if we rewind far enough, and it is a Christian math textbook. Like, what is a Christian math textbook supposed to be like? What's that supposed to look like, feel like, sound like? Which is really what our goal here with this podcast. Let's talk about that. But to some extent, I feel like it must be more than word problems that talk about Christian bookstores selling certain amounts of WWJD bracelets, which is a real thing. And I'm trying not to caricature the textbook.
No, you don't want to. And that's surface level.
Totally. And I think it must be more than just the textbook. And that's why we're having this conversation. So I'm still on this journey of what does it look like, sound like, feel like. And I think that it's a big thing that we're still fleshing out here.
Now, you're talking about this explicitly Christian math textbook, what that might look like. You reminded me of some work that's been done. I've said that this is a conversation that is broader than our own school context. We're tapping into this faith and learning conversation. And one guy, his name's David Smith. He is, let me read the back of this book, the director of the Kyres Institute for Christian Teaching and Learning. He's a professor at Calvin College. We'll tweet out, Riley, can you tell?
Yeah, we have Twitter, which is @notmanyofyou, short for Not Many of You Should Become Teachers. And we'll make sure to tweet out a link to David Smith's book here called On Christian Teaching.
Yeah, On Christian Teaching, Practicing Faith in the Classroom. And in that, Smith opens, I'm giving him credit because this is where I learned this from. He talks about this pedagogy gap. And so you can have a school, this is what he means. You can have a school that has a fantastic mission statement. You can have a school that has a statement of faith that you get everybody and their dog to sign. And you can have, Bible verses emblazoned as we do in our front foyer, and it's beautiful. You can have Christian worldview seminars and integration for your staff. You can buy those Christian math textbooks. And this is what he means by the pedagogy gap. It still doesn't actually have bearing on faith formation.
Yes.
You've just created a Christian context, but does faith formation, is it naturally occurring even in a Christian, quote, environment?
Oh, you're spot on. You're spot on.
So thank you, David Smith.
Yeah.
So I quickly have the sense I might become sort of like the book guy, you know, sort of recommending some resources for us. And Riley's not going to mention this, but Riley is going to bring not just sort of this new teacher energy, and you've got sort of the
pizzazz.
That's the word I'm looking for, of course, the pizzazz. And I'm bringing not tremendous amounts of experience, but just a slightly longer view and having delved into some of this stuff. One guy I'm thinking of, not even a Christian educator, but this is the beauty of common grace, that all truth is God's truth and these insights, would be Neil Postman. And this is like pre-internet, you know, he's, you know, the amusing ourselves to death guy railing against television and public discourse. And he wrote this little book called The End of Education. And his first chapter is The Necessity of Gods, lowercase g. We're all teaching in the service of some project. And all teaching is an intervention. And so if all teaching is an intervention, if there is a necessity of gods, that we are serving some end, we're intervening into the lives of these students, they are being formed whether we like it or not, whether we intend to or not. And I think most of our education actually is unintended, that our pedagogy is actually, it's what we imply more than what we actually state. And so that's sort of my hope in faith and learning. Riley, as you and I are talking about this, we hope to have guests on here, yes. Do some interviews and resource people and join in a conversation, hopefully stimulate some conversation about what is faith and learning.
Oh, absolutely. So I think the one thing that we could really hammer home here is that we're in the conversation. We're in the conversation as a journey here. You know, we're moving through and learning about what this is. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of different places that we're going to go to that we will both find beneficial as educators ourselves, but also things that are worth sharing with other people teaching in Christian spaces or who are Christian teachers, which I think is really brilliant.
I want Daily Mail.
Daily Mail. Who doesn't want Daily Mail? So what does that mean, Daily? Is you talking about
a little mailbag? Like we got, you know, like we got to hear from our listeners.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This would be the time when we'd
open the mailbag.
See,
open
I thought you were talking about like the UK. Like the UK has the Daily Mail.
Oh yeah. No,
sorry,
yeah.
I missed that. But I think
we could do current events too if you really want to. But I'm not going there.
Well, why wouldn't we be if we have the ability such as Twitter? This would be a great
check the
spot
tweets.
To. Communicate with some of you. So there's a number of ways that you can communicate with us here at the Not Many of You Should Become Teachers podcast. One of them is Twitter. You can find us at Not Many of You, short for Not Many of You Should Become Teachers. That would be the best way that you could contact us through Twitter. But always, you can... not always, what am I trying to say? But on Anchor, which is where we're hosted for our podcast, you can leave audio messages that we can then in turn use in our podcast if you'd like to communicate verbally, which would be a really cool opportunity as well. And finally, we are distributing on many platforms, including iTunes. So if you enjoyed today's podcast, giving us a 5-star review on iTunes just helps us spread some of these ideas that we think are worth sharing. Also, be sure to hit the subscribe button to be notified of when episodes show up. We are thrilled that you are listening to our conversation, and we hope to continue it with you. Until then, have a good one. We'll see you next time.